Best Western made booking our family beach vacation a breeze, and it felt a little like... Time to go. Okay, kids, back in the room.
You gotta come on, guys. This has to be like...
Good night. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
Hi, everyone. It is gorgeous in Philadelphia right now. Is it gorgeous where you are? Like, it is sidewalk cafe rosé sipping. Gorgeous here. It is also the kind of weather where men take off their shirts to go running, and I don't entirely understand that impulse. Put your shirt back on, bro. Put it back on. And just wear a shirt. Wear a shirt. But it is nice that everyone is outside. This winter felt like it was five winters long, and the sunshine is doing amazing things for my soul. It really is. One really quick housekeeping thing that I want to say. First, I want to say thank you, thank you, thank you to everyone who has bought The Sicilian Inheritance. It is flying off of the shelves. Bookshop.org is actually sold out right now. A lot of indie bookstores are also sold out. And many more tell me that their stock is running low. There will be another printing. There will be more books. But if your book club wants to read The Sicilian Inheritance, I would get your orders in now. They are still available at a lot of indie bookshops. You can find them at Barnes & Noble and, of course, on the Amazon. I do not want any of you to miss out on the book of the summer before the summer even begins. And don't forget that I am zooming into book clubs all over the country to make you a very authentic Sicilian Negroni. Yeah, that's a thing. It's just like a regular Negroni, but stronger and a little sexier. Now on to today's episode. We talk to a lot of women on this show. So many brilliant and brave and funny women, all of them doing interesting things in the world. And the other day, Nick Astor, my sweet, sweet husband, asked me, "Why don't you have more men on the show?" And my answer was, "I just like women better." I do. Sorry, Nick. And while that may be true, I do actually have some interviews with dudes in the hopper. And in fact, we have one of them today. Sam Dogan offered himself up to me as a sacrificial lamb. Actually, he wrote to me and told me that he was the male equivalent of the trad wife.
Well, one of the reasons why I wanted to reach out was because y'all said you were looking for the male version of the trad wife. And I offered myself up to you as the male version of the trad wife.
You did. You offered yourself up as a sacrificial lamb. You are a stay-at-home parent. And I want to hear a little bit about your journey to becoming a stay-at-home parent, a stay-at-home dad, and what that's been like for you. How did you get here?
Well, so I didn't know I always wanted to have children. We tried for several years when I was 30, started 34 or something, and it didn't really work because I was so focused on my career. I worked in banking for 13 years, 60 plus hours a week. And in 2012, at the age of 34, I decided I had enough. It was just too stressful. I wanted to do something else. I enjoyed writing, and I started Financial Samurai in 2009. And it was something that I really, really enjoyed doing, and it started making a little bit of money. So I said, oh, okay. Maybe there is life after banking. And so
there's always life after banking. It's just, you know, it's, you probably will make less money.
Yeah. Yeah. I definitely made 80% less money the first year. It was a little bit shocking, you know, not getting that steady paycheck that I'd been receiving for 13 years, mm-hmm. but you know, we had enough, we were frugal. We had our expenses down pat. And it was interesting. Once I left banking, the stress melted away. The white hairs went away. The weight stopped increasing. The sciatica, the lower back pain, all of that stuff went away. And we were actually able to have a child after I left work and after my wife left work, also at the age of 34. And so it's something to be said about less stress when you're trying to produce life. There's like a positive correlation there or an inverse correlation there. And so I decided after our son was born in 2017 that I was going to be a stay-at-home father for at least 5 years or at least until he went to school full time. And then we had a daughter in December 2019 and I wanted to make the same promise. So I'm 6.5 years into being a stay-at-home father. And the reason why I did it was all the books said the fastest and most important development is in the first 5 years. So I figured, well, I already gave up the money back in 2012. Might as well not give up the time I spend with my children because we all know that they grow up so quickly. So that's where I am.
Did you find it hard to find a community of other stay-at-home dads? And how do people respond to you when you say that you're a stay-at-home parent?
Yeah, it's really hard to find a community of stay-at-home dads. I couldn't find one. So what I did was I went to a new mother's outing at Golden Gate Park one day, and there were six moms. And then after about a 45-minute stroll, we all sat down in the garden with blanket. And then all the moms started breastfeeding. So I was like, well, this is a little weird. So I decided to give privacy and walk away for about half an hour. And so I looked for dads, and there's this dads group once a month, but I could never meet up at the time that they wanted to meet up. And so what I ended up doing was just figuring out on my own online. There's really no community that I see of online stay-at-home fathers. And so it's just, I had to figure it out on my own. It was like my dads don't seem to share their stories. They don't seem to share their dad guilt because I think there's a huge amount of dad guilt out there.
Talk to me about that, because I talk to so many women who say they don't think that their husbands have any guilt whatsoever. What is dad guilt for you?
So dad guilt, I think, is just like mom guilt. Dad guilt might be even more powerful than mom guilt in a way, because if the traditional role is for the dad to make the money, if that is mm-hmm. the traditional role, then the dad not making the money and being a stay-at-home dad is feeling... it creates more guilt because the dad is not out there trying to, like, you know, hunt for food and make the big bucks to provide for his family. And so that is something that I dealt with. I know other men who are stay-at-home parents deal with that as well, because also it's really hard to be a stay-at-home dad because in the first 1 year of life, especially, the baby latches on to the mother because the mother is the food source. And then in the second year of life, as the baby becomes a toddler and starts, you know, knowing what to do, the baby will also often, the toddler will also often rebuff the father for the mother because the toddler has been so connected with the mother for so long. So it's almost like a evolutionary push for dads to get out of the house and go back and hunt for food and make money after the first year.
Right, right. No, I can see that. You know, it's interesting because I push back on that so hard in my own family. Yes, the kids constantly come to me, like, mommy, mommy, this, when they fall down or they need help with something. And I did not do this in the very beginning. In the beginning with the first kid, I just accepted it as gospel. I'm like, oh, it's me. It's a mothering instinct. And now I push back and I'm like, no, go to daddy. I'm busy. Or in the middle, and I don't wake up in the middle of the night anymore. This is a third baby thing. Because I'm a psychopath if I don't get sleep. Like, my anxiety goes up. All of my body and back pain goes up. I can't make good decisions. I can't write books. I can't do anything, really. And I'm a crap parent. So Nick is the one that gets up at night whenever any of the children cry. And I think that that has made them go to him. Not more. Maybe not even equal. But, you know, definitely more than before. And it's getting closer to equality. But I do think that that is something that couples have to work on, because the baby is definitely, you know, attached to the mother for food, physically attached to her for 9 months. But yeah, it is an uphill battle. And I can imagine that uphill battle had to be hard for you with no one to talk to about it. My husband has never talked about what we just talked about with any other human.
Well, you know, yeah, there's, I guess men don't really open up about their struggles of being a stay-at-home father, maybe because there's fewer of us. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm.
Or being a father at all. That's the thing. I mean, just being a dad, I count myself very lucky that I have so many amazing mother friends and female friends that I talk to all the time. But I don't think we've created a culture where dudes talk about this stuff.
No. So I hope, I mean, regarding the FIRE community, for example.
Oh, yeah. So you were part of the FIRE community. Explain to our listeners what that is.
Yeah. So in 2009, I helped kickstart the modern day FIRE movement, which stands for Financial Independence, Retire Early. And the idea was to save as much money as possible so you can get out of your corporate gig as soon as possible so you can have as much passive investment income to cover your desired living expenses. And if you do that, you're financially independent. And that is what I did in achieving that when I left my day job in 2012. I had about $80,000 in passive income. It wasn't huge for San Francisco, but my wife still worked. And I told her, she's 3 years younger than me. So I said, if you can get to 34 years old like me, retiring at 34, you too can leave your day job and we can go live a crazy wildlife together. And so what's interesting about the FIRE movement is that I still think there's probably 70-80% of the participants or enthusiasts are male. And there are many males actually who say they've retired early, but really they're just stay-at-home dads because their wives still work, provide healthcare, and bring home the money. And so it's an interesting, curious psychological case where men aren't willing to say they're stay-at-home fathers. They'd rather say they are, you know, retired early retirees than the other way around. And so I think men just need to just accept realities and be okay and treat the other partner as equal and accept their situations in life.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, from your lips to God, goddess's ears. Yes, men do need to treat their partners as equal. I say that all the time. It's amazing to me that it's something we still have to say out loud. But what I do have a question, because this podcast is about social media. When you look at social media, do you see anything supportive for you, for dads? I mean, for a stay-at-home dad, but also just for dads.
I don't. Maybe it's I'm not looking hard enough. I'm not on Instagram. I see TikTok, but I don't see any support groups for dads. I'm on Twitter, but Twitter is more, I'm just focused on investing and finances and career and stuff like that. So not really. And I'm interested in hearing from you. Would you like your husband to be a stay-at-home dad, the male version of a trad wife? And do you think other women would like more of their husbands to be stay-at-home fathers? Because I hear, mm-hmm. what I do see is, you know, maybe jokingly or not jokingly, complaints that men aren't doing enough around the household. And that's probably true.
So that's a really interesting question, because my husband and I have gone back and forth between, you know, who is the breadwinner, who makes more money, who brings home the health insurance, which is a huge, totally annoying thing in our country. Yes, I think that I would love it. That said, I do think that there is an enormous pressure of being the sole breadwinner, of being the person who is providing all of the income for the family. So if you're the person providing all of the income for the family and you can have a stay-at-home dad, and the roles are very set, where he genuinely is taking on on all of the things that a stay-at-home parent would be taking on and taking that off of your plate. Yeah, that sounds great. But I do think that that is tricky, and I don't know how often that happens. Tell me how your setup works.
Well, so I'm glad you announced the other side of it, because, you know, if you're a stay-at-home parent, you have to rely potentially on the other one for all or most of the income. And if you're the provider of all the income, it's really stressful. It can be really, really stressful, especially as your family size grows.
Yeah.
You know, going from zero to one child is pretty stressful. It's shocking. Your new parent, all these expenses. And then going to two is maybe not as stressful, but, you know, there's like, oh, you got to think about two college educations now.
Oh my God, try thinking about three, man.
Oh yeah. If you have three college, you know, that's
crazy. Absolutely crazy. I can't even think about it. I'm pretending college isn't going to happen at this point.
Yeah. It's like $800,000 for 4 years in 15 years. It's like the worst case scenario, if 4 years private school, right? No scholarships, nothing. And so, yeah, you're going to have like $2.5 million plus for college education, Joe.
And with that, we are going to take a quick break so I can bang my head against the wall. I mean, I kind of want to just tell my children that college is for suckers and they should learn a trade, because first off, they'll always have a job. And secondly, those numbers are gonzo and I'm never going to save that much money. Gonzo. So, all right, I'm going to go bang my head against a wall. Listen to this word from our sponsors. I'll be right back.
Best Western made booking our family beach vacation a breeze. And it felt a little like... time to go. Okay, kids, back in the room.
You gotta come on, guys. This has to be like...
Good night. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.
And we're back. I've been talking to a lot of women about their career pauses and about getting back into the workforce after taking a pause to care for their children. That's something that Sam is actually grappling with right now.
I see the light kind of at the end of the tunnel, because our daughter will be going to preschool full-time in the fall of 2024. And so that frees up two more days that I can actually do something to make money, for example, if I need to. And I think I need to. And so it's going to be there where, okay, when they're both in school full time, it's time to go back to the grind a little bit. You know, I think that's the responsible thing parents should do.
Yeah, no, I also have this view that in a perfect world, and so like a lot of these ideas are, if I could create a perfect world that we lived in, is that different seasons of life for careers and jobs and parenting, we don't live in a corporate world that accepts those. Right now, because for so long we lived in such a male-dominated, still male-dominated corporate world, where it was just dudes going to work at 8:30, coming home at 6:30, and not worrying about what happened in the home. And they didn't have to worry about taking off because they literally had to push a baby out of their vaginas. But in my ideal world, you have a situation where one parent can be either the fully stay-at-home parent or the flexible parent, which is a different thing too, right? The parent that doesn't have to be in the office or be on calls all day long and can be there to do pickup and drop-offs and things like run to doctor's appointments. And then you can switch. Then you can switch over to, all right, I did this for these 4 years. Now I want to go back and do this work thing. Now you do this. And that would be the ideal situation for me, because I also get twitchy if I'm outside of a real job. Actually, I don't want to say real job. If I'm outside of kind of an office corporate job for too long, I just started doing some new consulting and I'm using Airtable for the first time in a couple of years. I'm like, oh my God. But it's nice, right? Because I get to like remember what it is like to work with other humans and to use the platforms that are being used right now. Mm-hmm. So if we had that kind of flexibility to come in and out of the workforce, but that would require a much more benevolent government that actually cares for people and a corporate world that actually cares for people. So that's not happening.
I'm trying to anticipate the future, 2024 and beyond, and what am I going to do filling my time? And so I've really zeroed in on consulting. Maybe not full-time work because it's so foreign, but consulting seems like the proper balance, maybe 20 hours a week to fill that time, to do something productive, to feel part of a team, to make some money, but also to still have enough time to do other things like, I don't know, play pickleball or tennis or hang out, go for walks. I think that's the right balance, consulting.
Well, I mean, and that's what I do now, right? It's some consulting. But one of us does have to have a full-time income, and make no mistake, like I have, income coming in from these podcasts, not as much as when I was with a major network, but I'm growing it. So now I consider myself an entrepreneur, which I don't really like, but I think that's the direction a lot of us are going in. And my books, right? So as long as I can keep writing books, that is a major, major source of our income. That's a nice plug for everyone to pre-order The Sicilian Inheritance, the greatest book I've ever written. I have a couple fire questions for you. Can I throw those out there?
Sure.
What kinds of things do you invest in to generate a consistent income?
Yeah. So about 50% of my investments are in real estate.
Yeah.
So owning physical rental properties. Mm-hmm. I've been, since 2016, slowly investing more in private real estate syndication deals. Mm-hmm. So you can basically crowdfund and invest in other properties around the country. It's for diversification and also for more passive income. Yeah. Because after owning, I would say, like 3 rental properties for myself, managing it starts becoming a pain, right?
Yeah.
And so you just want to focus more on passive. I at least I do, as the older I get.
Yeah.
And then there's dividend income. You can just invest in the S&P 500 or any dividend stocks. It generates 2-5% in dividends. And then now treasury bonds yielding 5% plus risk-free.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing because, it's all relative to inflation, but inflation is now at about 3.5%. And it seems like it's heading down towards 2%. If you can lock in 20 years of a 5% treasury bond, that's a real inflation rate. What else? Those are the main things in terms of income production. And then,
I think that's so interesting because, when I talk about trad waves, I heard from a lot of stay-at-home moms that, again, they felt badly because I said, I don't think anyone should be completely financially independent on another person. Mm-hmm. And I think that
I agree with that.
I don't. And I'd like to say a man is not the plan. And I do think that investing and generating passive income, again, something very hard to do. It's hard to make money in this country, but especially enough to be able to invest. But that is another way that stay-at-home moms can have their financial security if they are choosing to invest on their own, separate from their husbands.
Oh, absolutely. I think depending on someone, no matter how much you love them, is really risky. Because think about, obviously, divorce, 30-50% divorce rates. Think about untimely deaths. Everyone needs to figure out what they're going to be able to do. How can they make money just in case, the worst happened, right?
Absolutely.
Someone close to me was a stay-at-home mother for 12 years, 13 years. And then they divorced. Yeah, she had alimony, but she wasn't able to get a job for more than minimum wage because she had let her skills atrophy over the past 12, 13 years. So I hope everybody has their own pot of money, is investing separately as well as together, and keeps up their skills so that they don't find themselves on a deserted island one day trying to survive.
Yeah, which is what will happen. Tomorrow, I'm talking to a woman, a trad wife, former trad wife, who really regrets that she did depend on her husband for so long, because when they got divorced, she found herself really, really struggling. And she wants to send the message to young women, again, that a man is not the plan.
Yeah. Well, tell me about your household. How so? You work, writing, podcasting. What does your husband do?
So I work writing books, podcasting, and some years it is wildly lucrative, and then I have no idea if I will have any income in the future. I mean, the media landscape is that much of a wild west right now. It was not always like this, but it is right now. And so some years I am the breadwinner in our family. My husband has a very steady, very traditional job. He sells carbon offset. Well, he works for a company that sells carbon offsets and does climate sustainability consulting. And so he is a person who is typically on Zooms in our household from about 9 to 5, and sometimes outside of those hours too, because they're a global company. So I am the more flexible parent. That said, I sometimes have the quote unquote bigger job, the job that makes more money, because you never know what a podcast deal is going to look like. They look much worse now than they used to. I can say that. Or a book deal is going to look like. I have a new book, The Sicilian Inheritance. I personally think it's the best book I've ever written. It is a novel. It is an adventure. I think it'll be great for book clubs and also fun, just fun for people. I'm sick of reading books that are not fun. And it's based on my own great-great-grandmother's murder in Sicily many years ago. And it's filled with food and non-smutty sex and wine and cheese and just the right amount of feminism. That said, if it doesn't do well, I won't be able to write another book. So we don't know what my income looks like after, say, June of next year. And that's a scary proposition, which is why now I'm looking so much more intensely at investing and creating passive income. And I think that's where a lot of us are at. And I wish that there were more places online for women to look to for that kind of advice, much like how there's not enough places for men to look to for parenting advice. I'm only just discovering a lot of the places online for women to look to for advice. I will say it is hard to navigate this world because, much like everything with Instagram and social media, someone is trying to sell you their package of advice and you have no idea how to vet who is actually useful and who is not.
Got it. And what if, like, goodness forbid, there's no more book deal, no podcast supporters? How do you think your husband will feel and in terms of the finance?
Not good. Not good.
Well, what would be this plan, though? Let's just say you just couldn't make any money. Let's just think in extremes.
If I can't make any money, like if I can't even do something else. So the thing is, I'm constantly looking for like my next job too. Oh, am I too old to become a commercial airline pilot? Or I think maybe I'll go back and get a PhD and become a professor, which also seems to be a career that is waning these days.
Yeah.
I'm constantly thinking about what can I do next and what skills can I apply to another job. But say I was completely taken out of the situation and it was just my husband supporting our entire family.
Yeah.
We could make it work, but our lifestyle would be drastically changed. And we're also not a big spendy family. We have one modest car that we do not drive a lot. We live in a city. We chose to live in a smaller city. We live in Philly. We bike everywhere. We would definitely travel less, right? Because a lot of my writing involves travel. And so that is part of my job. And we love to travel. And we would tighten our bootstraps. And I think we could get through it. We could do it. It would be very difficult.
I think one of the things that I'm experiencing is so much of my time has been spent trying to take care of my children for the first 5 years of their lives. Then when it's done, it's like, oh, now what? I mean, I had that experience after publishing my book, Why This, Not That. Two and a half years writing it, editing it, marketing it. It did well. And then there was a trough of sorrow that I felt where, oh, now what? What's that voice? There's like this, the bigger you, deeper you dig, the bigger the hole, the bigger the void. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's probably wise and good for parents who are stay-at-home parents to think about that what next before that what next happens.
Yeah. And You know, I do think that being a stay-at-home parent shouldn't be a default. It should be a very conscious strategy. So, okay, I'm going to be the one who does this, but then when we move into a different phase of life, this is what I'm going to try to do. I think a lot about, I used to do this podcast called Committed, which was about marriage and how people made marriages work. And I interviewed an astronaut and his wife, Chris, was it Chris Hadfield? I need to look up his name. And I always get his last name wrong. And so, you know, she spent a lot of time being an astronaut's wife, getting him to freaking space, right? You can't, it's not, and they had kids too. So yes, she was a stay-at-home mom and she focused on like the home and parenting and getting that done. So he could literally go to outer space. Okay. It is Chris Hadfield. I looked it up. And then he went to outer space and he's a very famous astronaut. And then what he told me is he was like, it's her turn. And I'm going to do what it takes to build her up and help her start a new kind of career now.
I think that's a great strategy. My worry is that the window of opportunity that we have might not be as wide or as open as we think it will be. And the reason why I say that is, for example,
because society is not set up to give us other windows of opportunity in the corporate workforce.
Maybe one, there's ageism. That's definitely one. Two is health.
Yeah.
So for example, at 46, for me, I feel like my eyes can't stay open in terms of looking at a screen for longer than a couple hours before they get really dry. And so as a result, my ability to write for, let's say, 5-6 hours has waned. And so I was like, okay, well, maybe I won't write as much. Maybe I'll do some more podcasting. And then maybe one day my voice will go away or my mental capacity will go away. And, you know, when I was competing in league tennis, you know, I was feeling pretty good in my 30s, but now in my 40s, not as good in terms of recovery and all that. So I like the seasons. That's a good analogy. I think folks should maybe think about shortening the seasons a little bit. Because if it takes 20 years for your spouse to become an astronaut and go to outer space, that's a long 20 years.
Well, that's why I wouldn't marry an astronaut.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it sounds cool, right? Like, oh my God, I'm married to an astronaut. But that is a lot of work as the spouse of an astronaut.
Have you seen the show Selling Sunset on Netflix?
No, I haven't seen it. Is this something I should be watching?
No, it's really trashy TV.
Okay. I like trashy. I'm into trashy shit.
Well, it's really trashy TV that my wife and I enjoy. But what we noticed was that all the real estate agents are female, and there's a lot of fighting. A lot of fighting. And then the guys, the really rare guys who are on the show, they're not fighting too much. They're just like, oh, whatever. And I'm trying to understand, because I see this on social media as well. What is your opinion on the fighting between women versus the fighting between men? And do you think women fight more than men or are meaner than men?
No, I think that society really loves to talk about women fighting. I think culture and media love to talk about women fighting. And I can say this as a person who created a lot of media for a long time, who created trashy tabloids, literally created them, who wrote for very reputable newspapers and magazines for a long time. Our media loves the idea of what they like to call a cat fight. And so, for example, Sex and the City, the women who work on Sex and the City, they love nothing more than headlines about how they're in a cat fight, they hate each other, they're fighting. You would never see a story about the cast of, say, Ocean's 11 getting into a bro fight. We just don't, the media does not talk about male ire or male confrontations that way. We love to portray women as bitchy, as hating one another. And that merely perpetuates the stereotypes such that young girls grow up thinking that that is the way to behave to one another.
Okay, so I'm not, okay, so maybe I'm being manipulated by the media.
Oh, you're definitely being manipulated by the media. We all are. We all are on a very, very regular basis.
Okay, good to know. Good to know. I'll be more cognizant of that bias going forward. Because when I think about the trad wife, You had talked about how it seems like trad wife influencers pit or make other non-trad wife women feel bad.
They do. They absolutely do. Here's the thing that I think a lot of non-trad wife women didn't realize, that then often at times trad wives and stay-at-home moms feel bad looking at posts about women who work outside the home and, you know, talking about their professional successes. I do believe the Instagram algorithm sends us things to get us riled up. And so you can't win. You just can't win. You feel bad if you're staying at home. You feel bad if you're working outside of the home. I feel weirdly bad right now that I'm working and my kids are with our babysitter watching TV because they're all homesick. Meanwhile, they're freaking happy. They don't care that I'm not sitting down with them. They really don't. They're like, okay, great. I'll see you later. Thanks for letting me watch Jurassic World Lego version or whatever. So I think that as parents, we're swamped with guilt and shame, and letting go of that would be really healthy. As a dad, do you feel as much guilt and shame as I think a lot of moms feel?
Oh, absolutely.
Good. That makes me happy.
Well, you're welcome. I've written a lot about dad guilt. They talk about mom guilt, but here's the thing. If there's traditional roles where the dad goes to work and the mom stays at home, who do you think would have more guilt? I would think the dad has more guilt because the dad is away for 10 plus hours a day not raising their child.
They should, but I don't think they do.
But I think they do because I'm telling you they do.
They do. Okay.
I mean, because if I'm gone for 12 hours a day, I'll feel like, well, why did I have a child in the first place? Not to see them? And I feel guilty. Like, why am I grinding away 10, 12 hours a day trying to make money? Well, I'll tell myself, well, it's because I want to provide for my family, give them the best life possible. But I feel guilty not being with them because time is more precious than money, because time is finite. And so I say that there's a huge dad guilt epidemic, but nobody talks about it. And I hope more people do. And it's just one of those things where I sometimes think maybe it would be nice to not have that financial responsibility placed on my shoulders, because I think not only is going to work and making money a job, right? It's a lot of responsibility. You don't want to get fired. You want to get promoted. You want to get paid. But once you've accumulated enough money, it's another full-time job. It can be to manage your finances in a way that it doesn't blow up during the next recession, right? You always have to be a little bit paranoid. You have to diversify your investments so that, like, 2008 doesn't happen again, where you lose 30 to 100% of your net worth and have to start all over. I would say the dad guilt feeling is strong. It's just not talked about.
Well, now we're talking about it. I want to see more dad guilt on social media. That's what I want. I just want guilty dads. I want, like, shame-faced dads, the same kind of look that, you know, you see on, like, a dog's face when they're pooping. I want guilty dads. Dads on Instagram.
Guilty dads on Instagram. That's interesting. Okay.
I think we could make a lot of money on that account. Should we start it together?
Okay. Yeah, let's do it.
Done. Easy peasy.
So here's the flip side of dad guilt. To cure the guilt is to spend more time with your children.
Yeah.
Right? Because then I don't feel as guilty. So you're spending more time with them, you're taking them on 3-hour play dates, taking them swimming, taking them to random faraway places for soccer camp, whatever. But here's the problem. The problem is, well, the more you spend time with your children, then maybe the less money you're gonna make.
Fair. Truth.
And so then it requires the partner, let's say it's the wife, to step up in terms of the financial responsibility.
Yep.
And that's like something that I've encountered where it can be difficult, because let's say you have a spouse, you have a wife who's been stay at home for 5, 7, 10 years, and they're comfortable with their lifestyle, right? They're comfortable with the dad going to make the money, doing all that. Transitioning is hard. So what would you say to that?
Transitions are hard. Transitions are impossible. And we don't live in a society that makes them possible, easy, smooth, any of that. And so I don't have an easy answer. I really don't. I think that we're going to experience so much more of a shakeup now. And I hate to be so doom and gloom about what AI is going to do to a lot of jobs, but we're going to see a lot of people very shaken up in quote unquote white collar jobs about what will be available to them. And so this is a conversation we need to be constantly having. What will you do next? What can you do next? What are you qualified to do next?
Right.
Qualified to do very little, to be honest. Could I be a dog walker? Should I?
Yes,
should
you can.
I could. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's also, I genuinely believe, getting rid of some of the stigma around certain jobs. Hollywood is really terrible at this because Hollywood mocks a lot of jobs. They mock a lot of gig jobs. They mock a lot of hourly wage jobs as not being as good as other kinds of jobs. And I think that...
Really?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you just look at how they treat people like plumbers in movies, right? When plumbers are a really good job, you like do
make 150 grand.
Exactly. Yeah. Or how in a lot of, if you're watching like romantic comedies, or let's actually just talk about like Christmas movies, all of the Lifetime and Hallmark. And now I think they're on everything, all of the Christmas movies. It's always some high-powered lady who works in a shiny office building going home to meet a working-class former boyfriend. And working-class people are portrayed very badly in most Hollywood productions. Mm. They really are. They're looked down on. Hollywood is very condescending to working-class people. And I think that we have to stop being condescending about a lot of different kinds of jobs, because we're going to see a massive shift in how people work and what they work at.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought up AI, because definitely I am a little bit paranoid about all the jobs that will be taken away or eliminated in the next 10 to 20 years for our children. Because look, college is getting more expensive, yet the value of college is declining because everything can be learned online for free. And then the jobs are going away as well. So in my opinion, there's several ways to counteract AI. One is to learn physical skills that you can use with your hands, like plumbing, electrician, landscaper, so forth. And the other one is to invest in AI. Because if you invest in AI and it becomes a huge revolutionary technology, then you're going to get rich in 10 to 20 years. And if it becomes a dud overhyped technology, then you're not going to get rich, but at least your children will still have those jobs that they want. So that's what I plan to do.
Okay. How are you investing in AI? Tell me.
Well, you can invest one in public companies. This is not investment advice, but you can invest in public companies that invest in AI. So for example, Microsoft, anybody can buy MSFT that has $10+ billion stake in the AI company,
right?
OpenAI, which is a private company.
Yeah,
you can invest in NVIDIA, which makes the chips that power AI.
Mm-hmm.
You can invest in Google, any of these public companies. And then from a private company standpoint, you can invest in private AI companies that are only investable if you know the person, have connections, or you invest in a venture capital fund that invests in AI companies. So that's something for folks to look into. Personally, I'm going to allocate a good chunk of money to private growth companies and AI companies over the next 3 years, because I want to hedge. I want to hedge for what is potentially a bleak future, because it's been really clear to me from the OpenAI debacle when they fired the CEO that they are very profit-driven.
Yes.
They're supposed to be a nonprofit company that's
not
supposed
anymore
to help humanity, but they're a for-profit company. And when you're a for-profit company and you have this quote cap profit of 100x, which is total BS, you're going to crush industries for the sake of your own financial gains.
Yep.
And so it's either you're going to get crushed by it or you're going to try to invest with them. And so unfortunately, I think you have to join them.
We have to join them. Oh, the worst. The worst.
But
yes, I actually, that is good advice. And again, I like talking about this advice on this show, even though we are a show that focuses on influencing and motherhood. Again, because I think talking about finance gives women so much more agency over our lives, right?
Yes. Please, please read as much as you can about personal finance, investing, asset allocation, retirement planning, because the more information you know, the more you're going to actually take action to shore up your finances, and the more you're going to think about multivariables that you probably weren't thinking about in the past. And the more you think about it, the more protected you'll be. Because anything can and will happen. It's like Murphy's Law, right? If you don't think it's going to happen, it's going to happen.
Exactly. And that is all we have for today. You can find Sam at financialsamurai.com, and you can listen to his podcast, the Financial Samurai Podcast, wherever you get your shows. I learned a lot from Sam about dad guilt, even though I will tell you, I do not think that dads have the same guilt that moms do. I don't. But I do think that the stigma against stay-at-home or work-from-home dads is real, and I do think that these dads are really hungry for community. Also, I want to learn more about FIRE, because who doesn't want to retire early, my friends? Or save $2 million for college? Now, since I am paying for 3 college tuitions, if my children hoodwink me into letting them go to college, please buy the Sicilian inheritance. Or 7 of them. Thank you for listening today. Go do something nice for yourself. You deserve it.
Best Western made booking our family beach vacation a breeze, and it felt a little like... Time to go. Okay, kids, back in the room. Good night. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate, pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.